you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable. I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Katie Lambert.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And recently we got some mail from Sarah and Amber, and they sent us these lovely handmade paper magnolias and some necklaces. And they also sent us a book by Edward Kritzler called Jewish Pirates of the Caribbean, which of course meant that we had to read it.
Created quite a stir on Facebook.
It really
too.
Did. We were very excited. We put a picture of us with our magnolias in our hair wearing our beads, if you haven't seen it yet.
And people were really enthusiastic about the Jewish pirate idea.
Well, who wouldn't be? So I wanted to do a podcast just about Jewish pirates, but we decided it didn't make a lot of sense unless you had the background, which is really interesting. So we're going to do some background followed by some brief biographies.
It's almost like a two-part episode in one.
Exactly. And we've talked about expeditions of discovery before, you know, the human drive to explore, to conquer, to be first. And the Age of Discovery is one really fabulous example, the period from the 15th to 17th centuries when Europeans went far and wide in search of new lands and treasures. But there's a little discussed group amongst these explorers that had a different mission. It wasn't to find gold and cinnamon, but to escape the Inquisition and the anti-Semitic horrors of Europe. And these people were, of course, European Jews. And we're going to give you a little bit of their story.
Okay, so we've talked about some of this in our podcast on the Reconquista, but we're going to recap for you in case you haven't heard that episode yet. So if you've ever heard the term Sephardic Jews and wondered what a Sephard was, it was an outpost of the Roman Empire in what later became Spain. And at the end of the 14th century, there were 500,000 Jews in Sephard, making it the largest Jewish community outside of Palestine. And that stat is from that pirate book. A lot of this information is going to be from there.
So, yeah, you should definitely pick up a copy. Again, it's Edward Kritzler's book, Jewish Pirates of the Caribbean. And although Jews had called Sephard their home for a long time, it wasn't seen that way by the rulers of the land throughout the centuries, Titus, the Visigoths, the Moors. But in feudal Spain, Jews occupied high society. Things took a sharp, sharp turn for the worse in the 14th century. During the infamous massacre of 1391, Jews were accused of blood libel, using the blood of Christian children for their religious rituals. and also being the cause of the Black Plague. And the man who sparked this horror and these attacks was the friar Ferrant Martinez of Seville. And you should remember his name because his accusations resulted in the deaths of 100,000 Jews who were ordered to convert or die. Many chose death.
So skipping ahead a little bit to 1492, Queen Isabella of Spain, or of Castile and Aragon, orders the Edict of Expulsion. And we talked about that in the Reconquista podcast, but another 100,000 Jews were forced to leave Spain, and the rest converted and were known as conversos. Sometimes they converted publicly, but still maintained their own religious practices and
right, known as New Christians, and also crypto Jews. Under Isabella, the Spanish Inquisition began, and her Inquisitor General saw to the burnings of 9,000 Jews at the stake. By the early 1600s, there were very few places in Europe where Jews were allowed to be. So where was there to go? For one,
there's a whole nother continent
really?
Across the ocean.
The New World?
The New World. So a lot of them went as new Christians or conversos with high hopes for this new land and hopefully a new future where there was more tolerance.
Right, because of course 1492 didn't just mark the beginning of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. It's also the year Ferdinand and Isabella gave their approval to Christopher Columbus's mission to find that elusive route to the east. And Jews supported this mission. You know, perhaps he could find them a safe place to make their home. And also, in that book, apparently Christopher Columbus came from Jewish ancestry, which I had no idea, and I haven't finished reading it, I have to be perfectly honest, so I can't give
elaborate
you the entire
more on that.
Story. No, I would love to, but it's simply not possible at the moment. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting. There's another person we're going to talk about later in this
there
podcast
is.
Who you also
surprising
didn't know was Jewish.
Figure.
Yes. So Christopher Columbus, of course, didn't discover America, but he did discover all sorts of places, and some of them became Jewish havens, like the island of Jamaica. But Jews also dominated commerce in the New World. They're the ones who set up all the trade networks, who leased the ships, who introduced letters of exchange and credit. And their religious beliefs were ignored so long as they were useful. And once, say, you figured out the trade networks for yourself, you could go back to, you know, inviting the Inquisition to come visit. But Spain was pretty much the most powerful country in the world at this time. And the hatred that persecuted Jews had for the country made them an attractive ally for all of Spain's enemies.
Spain had a lot of enemies.
Yes. A lot of enemies. They could all work together to destroy the Spanish naval fleet. And because they knew all about ships, trade routes, and credit, these Jewish merchants knew where everyone was going and what they had in their ships. So that would make them perfect for one particular line of work I have in mind.
Piracy, perhaps?
Yes, it's a pirate's life for me. So a tiny little history of Jewish pirates. Our first mention of them comes from Jewish historian Flavius Josephus in Jewish Antiquities. In 63 BC, Jewish leader Hyrcanus accuses Aristobulus of piracy in front of Pompey. They're arguing over a leadership position. And our source for that was Herod the Great's secretary, who told the story to Josephus. So for some reason, that's considered a reliable source, I guess, for information, although I wouldn't really want to trust Herod the Great's secretary
yeah, I don't
with
know.
Anything else.
So, I mean, if that's our start of Jewish pirates, though, it continues long after that. And it makes sense, too. I mean, we already mentioned this extensive trade network and sort of the inside knowledge that a lot of people had about who was trading what, where it was going, and when. But it also makes sense that people who are forced to be outlaws, some of them might turn to an outlaw career where you can actually make a buck and maybe stay alive.
So the first famous Jewish pirate we're going to discuss is named Sinon, and he was Barbarossa's second in command and his favorite captain, and also a giant pain in the Holy Roman Emperor Charles's life. And with 100 ships, he occupied Tunis for Suleiman, which gave Suleiman control of the entire Mediterranean.
Suleiman might be a familiar name, too, for
after
those of
the
you.
Roxolana podcast.
Yeah, the Harem
yes.
podcast.
So when Charles offered Barbarossa North Africa in exchange for leaving Suleiman and joining him, Barbarossa made his point by cutting off the messenger's head. So we're going to go ahead and take that as a no.
But Sinan also governed Algiers and commanded the Turkish Navy and did away with most of the Spanish fleet in 1538. But he's also known for acts of mercy. It's because of him that the Christians of Tunis weren't all murdered by the enraged Barbarossa. So, I mean, for somebody who himself is persecuted, he seems to be remarkably tolerant.
Our next one is Samuel Palash, the pirate rabbi of Holland, and he was the son of a rabbi. He was born and raised in Morocco in the Jewish ghetto in Fez, which was home to 50,000 Jews. And I didn't know before I read this book that Jews were in Morocco before the Arabs brought Islam there. I had no idea.
Neither did I.
But he wasn't content to stay, and in fact, he and his brother Joseph started making it past the walls of the ghetto at night to help raid ships in the Strait of Gibraltar. But he got a reputation as, you know, a capable and daring young man, and the Sultan chose him as his trade rep. Samuel and his brother soon made use of the position to try to sell intelligence to other countries, but they were double agents,
were.
And in general, I think maybe just enjoyed the lying more than what they were actually trying to do. They told Spain that they'd sell them information about Morocco, and then told France they would sell them information about Spain. What they really wanted to do was find a safe haven for the Jews and a place where crypto-Jews could drop the Christian mask and go back to celebrating their religion in peace. And they decided on one particular place, which had said it would be tolerant of religion.
Yeah, they hear that Holland is open to other religions, and so they make their home there. It turns out it's more like, look the other way than we welcome you with open arms, but they had a community that established there, and the Jews in Amsterdam. And in 1603, they celebrated the Day of Atonement, and that was the first Jewish worship service in Holland.
Samuel also made alliances between the Netherlands and Morocco, which is pretty cool since one was a Christian nation and one Muslim. And in general, through all that he did, tried to get back at Spain any way he could. They had, after all, sent the Inquisition after him. In 1614, he began command of a Moroccan fleet and went after Spanish ships, trading arms for sugar, spice, and diamonds, and teamed up with the Dutch, the Moors, and other Jews to combat their common foe. One ship was adorned with a phoenix and had a kosher cook aboard. And he was pirating in the very last years of his life. He died in 1616 in The Hague.
Our next entry is Moses Cohen Enriquez, which
I love the name.
I think is maybe the best name. He pulled off one of history's largest heists, and that went down in 1628 along with the Dutch West India Company's Admiral Hein. They both hated Spain, as so many people in this podcast have.
I know. Do you think we're getting biased after the last couple episodes?
I don't know. We're going to have to figure out some.
We're going to think about this.
Pro Spain
topics
to counterbalance this a little bit. But Enriquez hated Spain because of the country's attitude towards Jews. Hein hated it because he'd been a galley slave. That's a pretty understandable hatred, I'd say. So guess whose ships they decide to attack?
Oh, Spain's.
Spain.
They boarded them off Cuba and made off with enough silver and gold to total around $1 billion. In today's money. That, I mean, does that put our art heist to shame?
I think it does. Any article we have about diamond heist or art heist, nothing is getting near $1 billion.
No, not so much. Enriquez settled on an island off Brazil and was never caught, even though I think people knew where he was. Perhaps he was just an enemy they didn't want to deal with.
Maybe. So our final entry is Jean Lafitte, the Corsair.
And he's from a different time period than the rest of them, but he's also a much more famous pirate and one that many people don't know was Jewish.
Yeah.
So we decided we had to end our list with him. He was born around 1780, and he came from Conversos. His family left Spain after his grandfather was executed during the Inquisition. And he set up shop in New Orleans. You could come to his family's blacksmith shop to deliver your smuggled goods and slaves to someone who would pay for them.
He lived in islands in the swamps around New Orleans with his men, and he would attack Spanish ships on commission from Latin American countries. But he wasn't all scoundrel. He had this sort of patriotic streak, it seems. When the British offered him money to help them attack New Orleans in 1814, he instead passed on the information to the American Army. He wasn't trusted, and the bay where he was located was still raided. He made another attempt and spoke to General Andrew Jackson, who promised a pardon in exchange for his aid. So I think this, we mentioned the Battle of New Orleans a little bit in one of the 1812 podcasts,
right.
But I think it's interesting this pirate has a Jean role Lafitte in the whole thing.
He led 1,000 men in the War of 1812 and fought bravely, but then he went back to being a rascal. He left New Orleans for Galveston, Texas, where he set up a new colony for his privateering men, and he was left alone until some of his followers attacked American ships, at which point he sensibly departed from Galveston, and we don't know how he met his end. But speaking of endings, we have a bit of a sad one today. This will be my very last episode of Stuff You Missed in History Class. I am moving on to a new opportunity, and while I'm very excited about that, it is incredibly hard to say goodbye to the podcast, reading your emails and letters and opening all your presents and hearing your stories and seeing your pictures and having you tell us all about why you love history and the things you're passionate about in your lives. That's been the highlight of my day for a long time now. So thank you for listening, and I will very much miss talking to you every week.
And Katie, it's been such a joy to host the podcast with you.
I'm going to miss you, Sarah.
I'll miss you too. We better not go on or we might start tearing up.
Yeah,
here.
There may have been a little tearing up. I had a small surprise party with our video team. I'm currently wearing a tiara under my headphones, so picture that if you can. But don't worry, Stuff You Missed in History Class is not over. There is another fabulous host who will be taking my place. I promise you will like him or her. It's a surprise.
And a special guest host.
There will be a special guest host who I know you'll like, but I don't think you'll like anyone quite as much as me. But thank you. That's the end of our episode for today.
We'll miss y'all.
We, of course, have a Twitter feed at Missed in History. We've also got a Facebook fan page. And you should always make a visit to our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the Stuff You Missed in History Class blog on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.